It's the witching hour. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Call, please.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Yvette Itu.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please join us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
And if I may have a motion for approval of our minutes for September 21st, subject to any amendment?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Financial report, please.
Commissioners.
Morning.
Through the first three quarters of 2023, the first item that's highlighted, you can see at the bottom, this is just total revenues. We're up year-to-date 31.6%, but I've also highlighted expenses. We're up 16.2%. So while revenues are up, you can see that our expense line items are up also. The biggest drivers in this increase, and we'll go through this in more detail, would be our new property tax levy, grants and donations, which have been received this year, as well as charges for services. So we'll go through all three of those in detail. Talk about the zoo, and the highlight here is through the first three quarters, the zoo general admission revenues are up 7.5%, the $431,000, I've highlighted that. I did point this out because this kind of stands out a little bit in the month of September, souvenirs and refreshments, and that's driven by the new Aramark contract, better terms in the Aramark contract, as well as just increased capacity. So things went really well in the month of September in terms of souvenirs and refreshments with that contract. I did highlight because we've spent almost $3 million in capital. This is 6.2 that it's almost primarily, most of the numbers due to Bears, 6.2 of the 7.2 million was related to the new Bears exhibit. And I raised this up because we're going to talk about capital as we go through each individual group, because that'll be something that becomes a big topic as we look at the budget for 24, 25 going forward, as we have a number of large projects that'll be coming. It's golf. And you can see that greens fees are up 18.8%. The biggest driver is rounds played to date are up over 48,000 rounds, which is 19%. 90% up in rounds played leads to 18.8% up in greens fees revenue. I did want to point out that the other thing that comes along with that is food service. Food service revenue year to date through three quarters is up 20.5%, which makes sense. If we have about 19% more rounds being played, we would have about 20%, 90% more food and beverage. The total revenues are up 22.3%, but I always want to tie back to expenses. When you look at the expense number right there, that is up 14.6%. So while we drive more revenue, we're also incurring more expense. So everything up here does not all relate to net income, but a large percentage does. Revenues to date just broke $1 million over what it was into three quarters last year, which is a 39% increase over the prior year. So almost $3.9 million net revenues compared to almost $2.8 million net revenues. Again, their construction projects year to date are primarily the Manikiki Pump Station and the Manikiki Management Center. And again, we'll talk about capital projects that we'll have in line or online for the next couple of years as we continue to work on maintaining our golf courses. A couple of the individual golf courses that I did want to highlight, the best performer through the first three quarters would be Sleepy Hollow. It's up almost 53% year to date where it was. If you look at the $799,000 compared to the $523,000, that's a 52.8% increase over the first three quarters of 2022. But I didn't want to leave out Shawnee Hills. They're up 48.6%. And Seneca, which is up 49.4%. These three golf courses are really having a really good year. All the courses are doing well, but these three are doing exceptional compared to the first three quarters of 2022. Enterprise funds. Actually, before I leave golf, I did, and Commissioner Rinkers brought this up at times, I was doing some research on rounds played, And where, if we just look at 1 year compared to the next or just monthly, the rounds played total this year in September were 42,000. The rounds played last year in September were almost 34,000. So it seems like a big difference. But when you back it up to 21, the rounds played were 37,000. So when you only look at 1 year, you can see that. You can get maybe sometimes a slanted view. So it's good to look back a couple of years. And that's why I tend to focus on year to date, because you can have timing issues on a monthly basis. But then when I looked at year to date, our rounds played are almost 305,000 this year. In 22, they were 256,000. And in 21, they were 259,000. So there clearly is a big uptick this year. But just when they come in, I would point out that it doesn't look like October will be as strong as maybe we had hoped, because we've had a lot of rain. I mean, all you have to do is look around and see the weather, and golfers just can't play golf in the weather that we've had. So when I report to you next month, we might not get as good of numbers, but in the month of September, they were really good numbers. Now, when we get to enterprise, you can see that concession revenue is up almost 35%. The primary driver is Merwin's, and we're going to see that when we look at the detail. When you look at net revenue year to date, last year, 78,000. This year, almost 375,000. So primarily driven by concession revenue. Total revenues are up 21.4%. Total expenses are up right here, 15.4%. So that's a recipe for success. If your revenues can go up 21%, but expenses only 15%, you're getting the 6% margin of push. I was talking about with Merwin's right there. You can see from last year at this point in the year, we were still running a little behind. This year, we're $242,000 ahead. That's a $404,000 swing in 12 months from there to there. But I also like the consistency. You can see that the beach house, very consistent through the first three quarters, 22 to 23. Same thing with the marina, 349,000, 354,000. This is just very, what I would call, consistent, well-run, the way we like to see things. If you flip to the next, go ahead.
One question on the 55th Street Marina, you don't have anything, any capital budgeting in there for any sinking fund to pay for the CapEx, do you in that?
We do not have a sinking fund, but we do have some projects. And when we go through the budget process this year and talk about going forward,
okay,
you'll see a number of large capital projects that have to come forward.
Okay, thanks.
And I guess I appreciate you asking that, Commissioner Moore, because as I mentioned how well we've been doing, we have been doing well. Understand that in the next 9 years of our levy cycle, a lot of money is going to be spent on things like the rainforest at the zoo. We have Hinkley Dam, which is primarily being funded by us entirely. And we have, you've mentioned the marinas before, the boat docks, our reservations. So we are going to have a lot of projects we have to look at and talk with you about. You can just see, again, I like consistency. Accountants, we kind of love that. I just like consistency with a little bit of uplift. And so you went from 89,000 to almost 95,000 at Huntington Beach. And again, that's product of good weather, product of improved facilities, and just attendance. And that's all I had. We had just a very good month overall. We have just started in the budget process and closing. We're meeting with all of the managers about their budgets for next year, and we look forward to talking with all of you in the next 2 months about what our budget looks like for 2024 and forward. Are there any questions about the finance report?
Good. Thank you very much. Brian.
Morning, everyone. The first general action item we have is the 2023 budget adjustment number 10. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. It's on page 9 of your materials. Budget adjustment number 10 is for $10,352,352. The detail is on pages 54 through 56. I did want to, for the record, note two items on page 56 of the detail. One adjustment is for $1,567,500. That's for the Garfield Bridge Parkway replacement project. The appropriation is covered by new state revenue from the municipal bridge program, so that's there. We also have an adjustment for almost $8.5 million. And that's for various land purchases. The appropriation is covered primarily by capital funds, which we already have in hand, as well as a $2 million grant for the Hawthorne Valley purchase that we received. So those are all covered. So I'd ask your approval of that adjustment, or I'm sorry, budget adjustment number 10.
Motion.
So second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Getting there. Next action item we have is the request for the approval of the 2024 user rates and fees. This is a very collaborative approach across all divisions, including operations, zoo, and marketing. We try to be matching as much as we can the market rate. The user rates and fees fall between 57 and 72. Again, these are the proposed rates moving forward. This is a request for approval. We do it in this budget month so that we can start to know where our projections will be going into, so we can start doing our projections for 2024. If there are no questions, it falls in the bottom portion of page.
A lot of these were pretty much the same, but the focus was like group rates, things.
We did just a little bit of tweaking and adjustment. We did an increase in the previous, so we tried to balance for a little bit, and then we'll start again looking at the market elasticity. We know golf that we're actually sitting just a little bit below the market, but we're seeing right where our numbers are. Some of the competition, you know, we're buying Ironwood. A few others have closed in the region. So I think, again, we should be in a very cost competitive mode. Purchasing all of the carts have helped. So, you know, I think all of those things kind of balance together, and understanding the market. We've done a very good job balancing that and still being able to provide a value.
Great. Thank you. Have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is a request for the 2024 tax advances. Wade?
Thanks, Brian. On page 10, you'll see a recommended action. By statute, I need authorization from this board to request advances from the county fiscal officer. We were provided the dates. They're going to make those advances available for 24. They're at the bottom of page 10. And so on those dates, then we would get an advance on the real estate tax collections for our levy. So I would ask your approval.
Move the motion.
So moved.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the increase for the rental of the mobile trailer for the police at Timberlane Farms. This dates back to 2015. This has been one of our work in progress. We're looking at a more sustainable option. However, we have not quite figured out exactly how to pull everything that we need for that location. So we're asking for a revised consumption in the total amount of $107,135 on the top portion of page 12.
Move the motion.
So moved.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the adoption of the Cleveland Metro Parks Codified Rules and Regulations for 2023. This is, again, we're revising a few things. Kyle, if you'd like to highlight things, Chief is also here as well.
Yes, thank you, Brian. Most of the revisions there, there are some relates to state law changes that are kind of outlined in the agenda. And then there's some other ones. We've updated drone weights just to give our staff more flexibility to approve certain drones if we feel like it's appropriate for the circumstance by which the drone permit comes in. So it gives you more latitude to determine what might be best.
Why do they need to be bigger?
They're just getting bigger.
Yeah, the capacity and everything, and load capacity. You see in Texas, they're talking about delivering drugs.
So they carry more stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's some updates to the permit requirements, just some cleanups, based on some research we have on First Amendment issues. And then the following, most of the other updates are just, as I mentioned, higher vise code updates that we have to incorporate into our code.
Sorry, real quick, most of these are a higher vise code, but the weights on the drones are we're setting them?
Yes, internal.
Okay.
Yes.
And we do a formal approval process for anybody that wants to fly a drone through the space up to that 400.
Just for yucks, what do we use drones for now? Because it's really expanded.
I think the latest example is Hinkley Lake Dam. They've done an amazing job doing the flyover of that particular drawdown process. Certainly, we've used it at Hawthorne Golf Course, taking a look at the ecosystem there. So we continually find new and creative ways to use our mapping and technology and actually overlay it into our GIS systems.
Thank you.
One question, the low-speed micro-mobility device, that's sort of redefining what that broad subject is, right? So it isn't making any changes in anything.
That is accurate. So we're just expanding the definition of micro, low-speed micro mobility device to fit with practice. We've noticed a couple more of these electric one-wheeled unicycle and electric skateboard, so they would still have to comply with all the speed requirements, the safety requirements, but we're noticing more of them, and we want to include them within the definition.
Got it. I understand. Thanks.
Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of 15 to adopt the Cleveland Metro Parks rules and regulations in their entirety.
Move the motion.
So moved.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is the management services agreement for Manikiki Banquet Conference Facility Catering Operations. We have had a longstanding concessionaire there in Dinos. They have done a very nice job through a number of years that included through COVID. They were the sole responder. We have 24 through 27. We have a total remittance value of up to $510,000 to Cleveland Metro Parks. We continue to see some capital level of investment from them. Cleveland Metro Parks has put in a new maintenance facility, will be putting in a new cart barn, is buying a new fleet of carts, and will be working on the roof, windows, and siding of the clubhouse as well over the next number of years. So, as well as an irrigation system going in. So Manikiki is seeing a full-scale renovation. It's one of our more historic and higher-end golf courses. So this continues to be, a continued investment. Dinos has done a nice job. They're also at Pine Ridge, just north of that. So they do have some economy of scale, which actually helps provide a better product for our customers. So recommended action falls in the bottom portion of 16, rolling into 17.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Thank you.
Next is the amendment to the Edgewater Marina Operations. This is a management services agreement. This dates back to 2013 when Cleveland Metro Parks took over. This is for the next three-year period, 24, 25, and 26. They have provided a quality product over a number of years, again, in some challenging years. We continue to strive to make sure that they can stay consistent with the managing of our marina operations up to our standards. This continues the existing management services agreement with FDL. Recommended action falls in the top portion of page 18.
Just a question. Do we have any long-term plan of a transition on management?
Yeah, so it's interesting. And I had a conversation with Commissioner Moore. As Commissioner Moore knows, the equipment that's all related to these marina operations, in particular at Whiskey Island and our Edgewater, there is a lift, a travel lift. They're over $500,000. So I think we're starting to look at the value proposition of being able to get a guaranteed number that comes to Cleveland Metro Parks without some level of exposure over time from a cost perspective. So we've continued to kind of maintain the concept of having a concessionaire at those two locations. They do provide combined services between Edgewater and Whiskey Island. They also do manage the dry stack, which is a very unique thing, as Commissioner Moore knows from his previous time there. So we are continuing to evolve it. If the commissioners also do remember, the addition of the Wendy Park Bridge, the trails, we've continued to make, advancements in the park. And this is one of the areas that we'll continue to look at if we can provide a better service, but it's going to come at a significant cost to the park district. And we have to look at that rate of return.
It's prioritized.
Yep. Against the current rate of return. Having said that, the commissioners have approved the purchase of Ironwood. That was not necessarily in our 10-year projection. So priorities do shift over time, but having a guaranteed revenue stream buffers against any pushes and pulls.
One issue, Brian, that I'm a little concerned about is the CapEx that's going to be involved with these waterfront projects are much more extensive than I think we're necessarily planning. And it's not just the equipment, the travel lifts and the forklift trucks, but it's just a whole bunch of other stuff. In some cases, it's maintaining a break wall and stuff like that. And I think our goal has been to not necessarily subsidize golfing or we subsidize golfing to the extent of maybe $1 million a year in CapEx mainly, but golfing is doing very well. But I think I'm not sure that we're charging the full cost of of these things that we need to maintain to have a good boating situation. And what I guess I would think is one way to do it is to make the person who's running the marina in charge of getting his own equipment, maintaining it, and just doing the full job, and making sure we get the money for it from the people that are using the marina. And so I would just, I know right now it would probably add a substantial amount to how much both our concessionaire rents the space for, or in the case of 55th Street, what we rent the space for. But I think that's, I think we have to understand that that's a big number. It's not $1 million. It's several million, you know, maybe as much as $3 million.
I agree. Thank you. We'll continue to, again, revise the 10-year projection based on, you know, the team, the work that they do, the maintenance of the docks, the tightening of the gangways, the electric upgrades, all of those things we continue to, you know, take deep looks at from the capital improvement standpoint. The recommended action falls on the top portion of page 18 to extend the existing term of the management services agreement for Edgewater.
Move the motion.
So moved.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
The next one is the amendment to Whiskey Island. Dan Moore abstained.
Yeah.
Correct.
No, Dan Moore abstains the next one.
Next one. Yeah. Amendment to the Whiskey Island Marina Operations Management Services. This is, again, a continuation of the work that we've done at Whiskey Island. We have talked at length the annual remittance, the capital improvement. Total value to Cleveland Metro Parks is $375,000. They continue to provide the food service and maintain the dry stack as well as the docks. Recommended action falls to extend the existing management services agreement with FDL for a term of 24, 25, and 26.
Move to approve.
So moved.
Second. Just say second.
Second.
Second. There you are.
You're excellent.
Yeah. All in favor?
I abstain.
And Dan Moore abstains. Thank you.
Yeah. Dan Moore voted on the previous action item with Edgewater Marina, but he did not vote and abstained on the Whiskey Island one, just to be clear.
Thank you.
The next one is the 2024 property and liability insurances coverage. This is one of my favorite topics. Greg is ready to go. This is one of the necessary evils of running a 25,000 acre park system with over 400 plus buildings. So Greg, you've done an amazing job keeping us in line. So we appreciate that. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning, commissioners. It is my favorite season, and not fall, the insurance season. I think I'm the only one that loves insurance season. Here we are again for our annual discussion on insurance. Before we get into the RFP, it was an RFP year this year. I want to take us back a little bit to 2019. We had a project that we embarked on with Jackson Deacon, Crane Langner, who was our risk management consultant. This project was to go back 17 years, look at what premiums we were paying for 17 years, what liabilities we had, what retentions we were looking at, what losses we had. What we're really trying to figure out is traditional insurance really the way to go? Do we do traditional insurance like we have been, this program that we're involved in? Do we do self-insurance? Do we do some sort of catastrophic loss insurance, high deductible thing? What we found through that process was that really traditional insurance is our best bet. It's our way to go. We did not see significant savings in any of those alternatives at that point. So that was in 2019, and talking to Wade would like us to do that project again here. So in the next 12 to 18 months, I think we'll start that process again so we can update you folks on the commission again about, you know, is this the best thing for us to do? Right now, we really feel that it is. Traditional insurance is the way to go. So, but really why we're here today, obviously, is we had an RFP this year. We're coming to the end of our cycle. It was a three-year cycle. We had Jackson Deacon as our agent for the last 3 years with Tokyo Marine HCC as our insurer. They've done a fantastic job with that, but obviously, you know, we're at the end of our cycle. We need to go out to bid for the RFP. And the RFP process is a very lengthy and sometimes tedious process. We start in February and we end up here in front of you folks. And it really takes a total team effort. So everyone from park operations to fleet to planning design, especially Ryan Danker, who's our architect, who really analyzes and gathers all of our data for all our building values and things like that. ITS and police and really every department, every division contributes to this because we need all this data to put in front of underwriters so they will hopefully bid on bid for the services of our insurance package. So this year we did that, and we put out our RFP in June. Unfortunately, we only got one response from our incumbent, Jackson Deacon and Associates, and Tokio Marine HCC. And I think Kelly McKeon is here. Kelly McKeon is the Executive Vice President for Jackson Deacon. They've really done a solid job for us, really nice. Kelly, we go to with our big issues. He's always responsive. And Carly Knapp is our day-to-day. She couldn't be here today, but she's our day-to-day account manager. And she is super bright, super efficient, and they're fast, which is something that I love because we move fast, and so we need our partners to move fast as well. So they've done a fantastic job for us, and we're delighted that they bid with Tokio Marine HCC. We do have an increase this year that we're coming to you with. It's a 13.7% increase. Sounds bad. I would say that that's pretty good. In the public realm, we've been seeing increases of 20%, 30%, sometimes 50%. So 13.7% is not bad. In 2020, we had a little decrease because of the pandemic, right? And we've seen pretty much that 13%, 14% increase the next couple years. The reasons, it's not our losses. Our loss history is very, very good, and credit to our staff, facility managers, field staff out there making sure things are clean, in good repair, safe for our folks when they go out and visit. What's really driving this is market conditions. One, everything costs more, unfortunately. And then two, as Commissioner Moore always points out, it seems like when we do better, it's costing us more, right? So we bring in more revenue, we add more buildings like this beautiful building, Susie's Bear Hollow, Karen's Way Play Space up in Huntington. We're adding those cost more premium for us. We add personnel, we add more police officers, add more vehicles onto the road, which you folks have, you know, approved vehicles throughout the year. So all those things add up. Insurance companies consider those exposures. So more exposures, more premium. And so that's really what's driving it. But nothing on our end that we've done as far as losses or anything like that. Any questions, if you have any, with regards to the insurance coverages?
I think 14% increase is fantastic. I mean, in this market, we're getting 50% increases.
Absolutely. And Jackson Deacon, again, it really fought hard for us as really a partner for us to go to bat for us at the insurance agencies. You know, they're always talking to us up how great of an organization we are and all that. And, you know, that really goes far with the insurance companies when we got somebody that has our back, like our agent. So it's fantastic. Any other questions?
Very good summary.
There are no questions. It rolls through. The recommended action starts on page 20 and rolls all the way through. I will not read all of those, but I will also thank Jackson Deacon and Associates for being our agent broker. Their fee is in there, and they've done a very nice job of holding. So we appreciate their work and their partnership along the way. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 20.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next action item we'll roll into is the authorization of land acquisition. This is the Bittinger property in Rocky River. This is 2.9 acres. This has been probably on the list for over two decades, and we have worked through, I would say, many different family members and family dynamics. We were very happy to have the property come back to us again. And if you're on the platforms on the other side, the views to this, if this were to be commercialized, would dramatically change the view along the river corridor there. So the team has done a really, really solid job with the Bittinger family, and we are able to protect that in the amount of $115,000 for 2.9 acres. So this is one of the protection zones and view sheds that I think Stinchcomb would be proud of. So the recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 22 to purchase in a fee simple for 2.9 acres for $115,000.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the award of RFQ 6776 Old Lorraine Connector. This is in Rocky River. This dates back to September of 2023. We've set out requests for qualifications. We had a number of firms that were shortlisted. We worked through the process. We are very happy to be able to select Michael Baker, recommend to the board for the opportunity to do the professional services for this trail in a partnership with the Cleveland Clinic, Fairview Hospital Connections. They just most recently repaired the road, and we have been working with City Councilman Charles Life in the area as well. So this is another very unique way, along with Mastic Woods Connector, to be able to build a connection back down into the park in that particular area off of the old Lorraine area. Recommended action falls if there are no questions in the top portion of page 24.
We approve of the motion.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
The next, Hart Crane Park Project Development Agreement. This is a continuation of 10 plus years worth of work. Our team has worked diligently with the Canal Way Partners Group. This is Hart Crane Park. This is a half acre of riverfront property adjacent to Merwin's Wharf off the Columbus Road Lift Bridge. This is owned and maintained by Canal Way Partners. We have long sought an opportunity to connect a multi-use path through the Hart Crane Park up to Columbus Road, and then this potential continuation all the way down to some of the new construction opportunities. This work will occur within the Hart Crane parcels that were listed. Again, this is a project development agreement with the Canal Way Partners for Hart Crane Park multi-use path project. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 25.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Next is Hinkley Lake Dam Rehabilitation, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources Dam Safety Fee. I see a chuckle.
Sorry.
This is the, again, our work that we have spent numerous years on and a tremendous amount of time to try to find funding sources. We are basically shouldering the entire cost of this. The lake has been drawn down. This is through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. This is their safety fee that we have to pay. Recommended action falls because it's over $50,000 on the top portion of page 26.
Can you explain a little bit more about what this is?
Red tape.
Is it backsheesh, sort of? Is that what?
What the little I can tell you about this is that when you look at who regulates the dams across the state, they are the agency. And so when you look at levels of compliance, whether it's the concrete portion of the dam or the earthen portion to the east, essentially, you know, they are the authority on dams. And so it's their fee to make sure that we're doing everything in the right fashion.
But it's not an insurance. It's just a supporting.
It's administrative overhead, otherwise known as vigorous.
Yeah, okay. Move the motion. Regretfully.
So they can tell us whether we qualify or not.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the amendment number one, contract 1719 special services. This is barge 225 modification and relocation. We did acquire a barge formerly known as Lean Dog and Horn Blowers. We call it barge 225. It has been moved over to Wildwood successfully. We have looked at what I would call ever-changing conditions along Lake Erie. It is a large vessel, and we need to secure the mooring process a little bit differently than the way we had originally looked at. So this is giving us the additional amount. There have been number of inspections and looks. We had one of the highest windstorms here most recently. It did move and I would say relocated a few things. So we are in the process of formalizing a few more connection points along the way before the winter months. So this is an amendment to contract 1719 special services with PE Limited LLC. Recommended action is on the middle portion of page 27.
And this has a cushion in there to make sure we got
it has
enough
the
stuff.
That is correct. Yes.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is authorization to enter into a sponsorship agreement and accept grant funds. This continues to be a very strong source of funds for Cleveland Metro Parks. This is through the Ohio EPA that offers the Water Resource Restoration Sponsorship program known as WRRSP. We have worked diligently to secure another set of funds in the amount of $706,731. This is for the Baldwin Creek Lowhead Dam Removal Project in the city of Berea, Millstream Run. This was a partnership that we worked on with the sewer district, Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. This particular project is actually through the city of Akron. They were our partner on the work that we had done at Millstream Run, in particular the area that we had done along Bonnie Park. They continue to get a benefit for it. If they partner with us, they get lower and better terms. And so this is a win-win project for both the city of Akron, which we have partnered with before, and the Cleveland Metro Parks to remove the Lowhead Dam in Millstream Run.
So even though it's downstream remotely, they get interested?
Yeah, it's, well, one of the times we needed to use another firm, I think it was Washington County, Washington Courthouse in Ohio. But it's the program, it does not matter within it's in the specific, it's just whether they
getting it done.
Yeah, whether they can partner with. And so the Washington Courthouse one, they didn't actually know about the program. The program actually helped them bring their project in budget and actually helped us continue our project. So
wow.
We've been very successful, Kristen Trulio, Natty Renane, figuring out how these things like actually work. But City of Akron has been a very, very strong partner for us in the work that they're doing on their consent decree.
Well, that's a flexible program.
It's an excellent program. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 28.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are setting the stage for 2024. As you can see, the next action item we have is the Cleveland Metro Parks Employee Group Healthcare Benefits. Matt is working his way up. Our teams have done an excellent job managing all of our types of plans, and Matt is here to give us a quick highlight. Matt?
Thanks, Brian. Not quite as tall as Greg, so thank you. Morning, Commissioners. Matt Hawes with HR. Back again to talk about our employee benefits plan renewal for next year. So, oh, there we go. Got it. So by way of background for our new board member and a refresher for our tenured board members, we have two main components to our health insurance plan. The large component, the primary component, is our self-insured medical plan. So we are self-insured from a medical standpoint, so we pay actual medical claims dollar for dollar out of our self-insured health fund. We do contract with the medical insurance carrier, and that has been Cigna since 2016 to administer the plan, and most importantly, provide us access to their network and their network discounts, and they provide various health improvement programs for our employees. We do, on top of that, we have stop-loss insurance to protect against catastrophic claims, and that is currently at $175,000 deductible. So if we have a significant claim that exceeds $175,000 in a given year, we are then covered from that point on. So that does against anything catastrophic. So we're self-insured with an asterisk on it. Our employees have options, three options for medical insurance plans, a base plan, PPO plan, and then a more expensive, lower deductible A plan, and then a high deductible health plan option with an associated health savings account. And employees contribute between 5 and 18% of the premium depending on their status and their plan choice. The second component of our health plan is the fully insured supplemental benefits. We offer a wide variety of benefits for our employees. We have Hospital and Vision, which is done at a similar cost share to the medical plan. The employer, Cleveland Metro Parks, pays for life insurance, long-term disability, and employee assistance program for our employees. And then employees have options to purchase group accident, pet insurance, and access to flexible spending accounts. So why are we here talking about benefits at a board meeting? Well, it's a significant spend in our budget every month. It's a significant line item on the financial report. It's approximately $9 million, give or take, depending on the year's performance. But as you can see, the significant component of that, 84% of that, is the actual medical claims payment. We pay a very small, relatively small amount to Cigna to administer the plan. Our stop-loss premium is about 8 to 10%, depending on the year. And then those, all of those fully insured components combined account for about 5% of the budget. So we really focus our attention on the medical claims payment in managing the plan. Looking at 2023, if you took a high-level look at 2023, if you look at the financial reports, it does appear to be a more difficult year from a claim standpoint. We have seen a significant uptick. But when you drill down into the claims, what's actually driving that is a handful of catastrophic claims. We have a small amount of claims that account for over 2 million of our spend this year, and that's 31% of our total spend.
How many, roughly how many claims were that?
That was four claims.
Four claims.
Four claims, yep. So four claims out of 1,200 individuals covered on the plan account for 31%. And that, you know, that, therein lies the reason why we have stop loss insurance. And this is actually because of those reimbursements that we get. And so out of this 2 million in spend on these catastrophic claims, we will be receiving 1.3 million back. We're awaiting reimbursement from our current stop loss provider, Medical Mutual. So that actually brings us to a pretty level year once we get those reimbursements back. Because the remainder of the plan is performing extremely well. So the, by and large, our plan performs extremely well when compared with benchmarks, which I'm going to show here in a second. So this is just some benchmarking that we do that I think kind of puts everything in perspective, how we perform from a healthcare standpoint. And so actually starting at the bottom here, so what we do is we look, the Ohio State Employee Relations Board publishes really detailed data on public sector healthcare plans. And so you can see when you're weighing or evaluating the richness of a plan, you typically look at the deductibles of the plan. And our A plan is a 500, 1000 deductible plan. And that you can see is right in line with the statewide public average and the Cleveland area public sector average. But you can see our premium rates are significantly lower than what we're seeing out in the public sector market. And that is driven by our performance, by our claims performance, and our ability to be self-insured. To further illustrate that, we've had a really solid run over the last 5+ years. And you look at the state's CERB, statewide average of premium increases year over year, you know, typically in excess of 3 to 7% there. We had a 2% increase in 2019, and we have had flat rate renewals since then. And we are proposing a modest increase for 2024 that we'll talk about in a second. And you can kind of see that trend. We have clearly either remained at or below the statewide average standpoint. So the plan performs well. Why does the plan perform well? Myriad of reasons. Some of it, there's obviously some level of luck involved when we talk about catastrophic claimants. But when we talk about the bulk of our plan, we have a strategy both in claims management and employee well-being. When you look at the long history of our premiums being lower than market rate, there is something in our culture that is driving that. It's at a point where it's statistically significant to look at why do we perform better. And we do things, we're very aggressive from a wellness standpoint. Our preventive care rates are double the Cigna benchmark rate. Our employees are getting preventive care, catching things, getting on the proper medication before they become more catastrophic. We have a very extremely low smoking population here. We have great access in the Cleveland market to healthcare. And our insurance plan has a broad network allowing people to access that. And then we also focus on many other levels of well-being, and generally we feel that our employees are happier, they enjoy working here, they're tied into our mission, and that makes them healthier. And we see that the bulk of our spend, the majority of our spend, or more than half of our spend, is on spouses. I mean, we spend more on per spouse than we do per employee. Our employees tend to be healthy, so it's really borne out as healthcare costs continue to increase and we see these large 20% renewals at other entities, we continue to maintain a very reasonable rate of 2024. We went out to the market. The concern we had going into the market this year, we go into the stop-loss market every year. They don't, providers will only provide one-year renewals in that area, one-year contracts. And we were concerned because when you have that stop-loss reimbursement year, that loss ratio goes up. And we were concerned our current provider, Medical Mutual, offered us a 45% renewal, which was not ideal, obviously. And so we went out to market. And Cigna, who was our previous partner in the stop loss arena as well, came back with a 10.2% premium increase. And so they're looking at our plan and they're kind of saying that this is an anomaly. Those claims are going to flatten out and we're going to be back to a successful year in 2024. So that made us feel really good about the outlook because they have access to all the deep data and they're really into it. And so allowed us to maintain a very modest overall premium increase of 1.5%. And from an employee impact standpoint, that's between $1 and $5 per month increase in premiums, which is very reasonable in this market. The Plan C health deductible, or high deductible health plan, making a change to the plan design so they won't see any premium increases. We actually, by IRS regulation, we have to increase the deductibles for that plan. So the Plan C participants, which is about 30 employees, will see no premium increase. And then all of our fully insured products are at a flat rate. So the storm, because we have these protections in place and we're hopeful that we get back on track next year. But we have a reserve in place that is protecting us and absorbing some of this as well. And we think we're confident that 1.5% is sufficient for next year.
Wow, very thorough.
Looks good.
Thank you. Thanks. Any questions?
Good job, Matt, and the entire team. And I applaud all of our employees that continue to be part of the success of our overall healthcare. The recommended action falls through a number of different pages for the healthcare, with the final part being on page 30.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is the award of bids. I will not read through all of them, but the recommended action falls on the top page of 32. Most of these are things to keep the Cleveland Metro Parks moving forward. There is one large one in there, RFP 6775, Cleveland Metro Parks to rebuild the website moving forward. The only thing that's constant is change in technology. This happens to be one of the areas that we continue to invest in. There is a break, so there'll be a top portion, and then I'll bring on the last recommended action.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next is authorization for the following award, bid number 6764, uniform apparel. Dan Moore will abstain.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Next.
Vouchers and payroll.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, you'll see at the top of page 50, resolution 23-10-152, owing vouchers, or the vouchers, wire transfers, and payroll-related expenditures for September totaled $13,280,179.86.
I think you can move on this one.
You can vote on this.
Yeah, approve the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And then Commissioners, Resolution 23-10-153 are vouchers that were paid to Arborware. They totaled $968.49.
I'll abstain here.
And I'll move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I think we have one more. Nope.
Oh, that was it.
We're good. Public comments. Marty? Excuse me.
I wouldn't know whether I dare chip in.
I don't know, Marty. It's a sign.
Uh-oh. Yeah, that's fine. I'm amused. It's not the technology. It's the beer mechanics that get you. Thank you. Is entertainment and recreation for park visitors a higher priority than safety, than protecting the natural legacy passed down to you? I do hope the current Wallace Lake construction includes addressing the safety issues and onsite rescue equipment that Mr. Odebrey requested. Both he and Mr. Moore, who gave the presentation on launch hazards at Emerald Necklace Marina, made valid points, highlighting risks which Metro Parks itself should have detected and addressed. Concern for others brought those citizens here. Meanwhile, no time or effort is being spared to transform the Pricey Barge into a creative event site with alcohol, I presume. Man overboard, perchance? No doubt it will need camera surveillance. But were there any cameras at Royal View to help with the latest murder? Used to be some there. As far as anticipating depreciation and saving for future repairs, it's not just the docks. All the new construction will be aging, or, like the barge, is already old. We hear sincere tributes to Stinchcomb and his legacy, but to repeat, Stinchcomb's necklace is not complete. Just lots and lots of new trails downtown, which Metro Parks creates a great effort with multiple entities. WPA's timeless works are likewise featured in historical presentations. Yet the handsome 100-year-old stone abutments for the Cedar Point Bridge aren't worth working with the county. If only. That may be a lovely playground at Huntington Woods, but it cost many mature trees and ate up the very limited green space to the distress of residents. Your Lubrizol study is examining climate impact on forests. These trees didn't even get a chance to survive. Donation or not, a better choice could have been made. Tons of new projects using the new levy funds as though they would evaporate. It seems rather blasé to lump those land purchases into an $8 million budget adjustment. Don't they at least merit individual cost breakdown, since some folks might appreciate the information? If the future is going to look kindly on what you are doing today, slow down and take more time. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else? We good? Okay. Information?
Thank you. We have three information items. I would like to highlight a special guest this morning. He is one of our employees, Chris Whittison. If Chris could please stand up. I'd like him to come to the microphone and just kind of break down. So Chris is one of our team members. He's here, been here for a number of years. This is not on the agenda, but we're in a space. Go ahead, Chris. You're going to be able to talk.
You look thrilled.
The microphone for you. I'm putting him on the spot. So Chris has done an absolutely amazing job. He's found very innovative and creative ways. This particular space here is absolutely fantastic. So Bruce, as you noticed when you came in, this is our first board meeting here, and Chris is just going to give a couple of quick highlights on it.
Well, the space here, it was dictated by a lot of our existing conditions, the underground utilities, things like that. But we were able to, we have a basic box on the outside, but within here we have a pretty dramatic space. The concept with the ceiling detail was the underneath of a tree canopy to try to bring some of nature into the space. And I know we have the windows closed right now, but there's a magnificent view over the amphitheater and the hillside over there. It's the leaves change and everything. And then we have the back patio here for special events, things like that. But I think it's a pretty dramatic space. And with Dr. Kuhar's leadership and the generous gift from the Mandels, we were able to create this space and another amenity to the zoo going forward.
Thank you so much, Chris. To the agenda, the 2023 Summer Nature Camp Scholarship and New Initiatives. Mary.
All right. Thank you so much. We need to go back to short setting, even shorter. Shorter. Yep, that's good. Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners, Brian, Wade, Karen, Kyle. It's a pleasure to be here. Even though we are here on a beautiful fall morning, I'm going to take you back a few months to the summer. We had a fantastic summer with our nature camps, and what I'd like to do is give you an overview and highlight some of our new initiatives. Before I get started, I just want to say a few words about summer camp and how we see that as part of our role as the Division of Outdoor Experiences and Cleveland Metro Parks. This is something that we feel is very critical to the work that we do. In the world that we live in, especially these last 3 years, kids have spent so much time inside, in front of screens. It's really been important to us to make sure that as many children as possible are getting that experience of a traditional summer camp. We also really focus on the quality. We don't want to just be a daycare, someplace that the kids are dropped off. We really pride ourselves in the fact that our camps are led by professional educators and that we're giving both an educational and a fun experience.
Very cool.
All right. Oh, down.
Mary wanted to see the
getting
outside.
Getting upstaged a little
bit. You want to see the outside? Oh, am I hitting the wrong button? Go down. I am going down. Oh. And I'll go back up. All right. Here we go. I thought I hit the wrong button and I made the screens come up. All right. Oh, thank you. Again, here's an overview of this past summer. We call our summer camp season usually around 9 weeks. This summer, we offered 143 different camps. These ranged from everything from our outdoor recreation, so kayaking and sailing, to preschool camps, to survival camp, creek stomping, you name it, we did it. We served over 1,900 youth ages 3 to 17 in those camps, and we offered those camps at 13 different locations within Cleveland Metro Parks. So not just based out of our 5 centers, but we had camps out of Hinckley, out of Garfield Park, out of Bedford Reservation, really trying to spread out that experience. As has been for quite a number of years, we filled quickly to our capacity. We were at about 97% of capacity, and we brought in over $200,000 in revenue from those camps.
How many campers did we have last year?
We're going to get to that in the next slide. I've got a few charts here. What I'm showing you is data from 2019 through 2023, minus obviously 2021 in there. Number of camps, you'll see we went from 63 in 2019 to 143, so more than double that. Looking at the number of campers, to your questions, Commissioner Moore, last year we were at 1,400. However, again, if you look at that trend, we've more than doubled the number of campers that we've brought through. And again, along with that, primarily because we've increased those numbers, we've seen our camp revenue rise almost threefold in there as well. This year, we did a number of new initiatives in order to, again, expand access, to bring in more campers, and also to provide those camp opportunities maybe to families that had not had that before. One of the first things, and this has been sort of an ongoing shift for the last 4 years, is really shifting our summer staffing priorities to our own nature camps. You'll see that picture down there at the bottom. I put that picture in. Megan, my admin, said, I don't think that's our camps. And I'm like, it's not our camps. Prior to this camp expansion initiative, we saw a lot of summer visitation from outside camp groups. So city rec centers, YMCA, those camps that really were offering that full day camp experience, they were really booking up our summers. They would come in and they would bring in the kids coming in the matching t-shirts, and we would try to wrangle them for a half an hour, again, still giving a quality experience, but because we were seeing those groups, we were unable to offer more of the camp. So we shifted that model. In addition, we had several of our teams really come up with some creative models. Rocky River Nature Center, Rocky River, hands down, our busiest nature center, highest demand for summer camps, expanded their summer camp programs to not just be at their centers, but to offer 2 remote locations within Rocky River. They were at Lagoon Picnic Area and Mastic Woods Picnic Area. And what they did is they offered the same camp week after week. We brought in seasonals who were teachers during the school year, again, maintaining that high level of professionalism, and we're offering those camps solely based out of those shelter areas, and that really allowed us to expand our camp options. We've standardized the time and the age groups so that as kids get older, they spend more and more of the day with us. Our outdoor recreation team has been really creative in how to keep and engage the preteens and the teens. So they offer a lot of these one-day adventure specialty camps and sailing and paddling and mountain biking and those things. Again, seasonal staff, we talked about this already. We really focused on trying to hire, especially for those camps that were being led by seasonals, professional educators. Both of our nature preschool camps offered camp experiences. They offered a three-week camp that was just 3 hours in the morning, as well as these one-week options, and those went really quickly. And then we've built in some efficiencies of scale as well, centralized waiver system, because we do get repeat campers so that we're able to process and register and not spend so much time on those administrative pieces. Probably the thing that I am most excited about is our summer camp scholarship initiative. This year, we took a whole new model to it. We really wanted to make sure, again, that we're able to bring in kids from throughout the park district and offered ways to help them out if the financial end was a barrier. So we started what we call the 10% initiative with fantastic support from our development team as well as our marketing team. We were able to garner support so that we could hold back proactively 10% of the spots in all of our camps and offer those as scholarships. In addition, we changed the process so that the scholarships were offered after the general registration. It used to be people had to apply in advance, which would be like February. They needed to know what they were doing. We set the deadline for the scholarships towards the end of April so that we could really work with our partners, CMSD, City Rec Centers, YO, to get that information out there.
How is the scholarship defined? How is it structured?
The way that it's structured, we wanted to make it as simple and clear cut and fair as possible. Basically, a family needed to show proof of eligibility for some sort of public assistance. It might be free and reduced lunches, which, by the way, every student in CMSD is available for. It might be assistance via food and those sorts of things. So it's pretty easy. It was a one-page application. They could scan that in. We did not want to be the collectors of anything like income and tax and that sort of thing. Sure. I was really proud of our work here in this first year. Again, you'll see these previous 3 years in 2019, 21, 22 were sort of the old way that we had done that. Again, people applying way in advance and getting a coupon code. With the new program, we were able to scholarship 78 campers this year, amounted to about $10,000. We didn't quite hit that 10% mark. What we did, so virtually every student this year that applied for a scholarship was awarded a scholarship. This is similar to a program I implemented when I was at the Natural History Museum. And what we found is it just took a couple years for it to really build up that interest and knowledge that that scholarship was out there. So we're going to shoot again next year for that 10% number, which will be about 200 campers, and we're confident we'll be able to get pretty close to that next year. We also had sort of a non-traditional summer camp. It really was not one that we opened up to the general public. This was the second year of our Euclid Beach STEM Adventure Camp. Again, what we were focused on is looking at that community up in the Euclid Beach area. So Collinwood, Euclid, East Cleveland, and trying to provide a close by traditional summer camp experience. So for this program in its second year, we again targeted specifically community centers, schools, apartment complexes, housing complexes in those areas to recruit those students. With the support of our development and corporate sponsorship, those are offered free of charge. These are much more of a full week of camp. So we had six different weeks. We broke them up into some different age groups, seven to 10 and 11 to 13, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. based out of Wildwood Marina, again, some internal phenomenal partners. Enterprise in August at Wildwood helped us out. The park management, Sean and his team. Outdoor recreation, youth outdoors came and provided things like fishing and kayaking. And we focused both on that adventure piece. You know, again, let's try kayaking in Euclid Creek. And we spent a day in the upland area and doing that STEM adventure where they're exploring the kinds of life that you would find up there around the beach. So again, this was another very successful year. We expanded it to 6 weeks and our are piloting this year an after-school program kind of focused on that same community. We've had some great drop-by after-school programs here just in the last month or so.
Do you anticipate the barge will factor into any of this?
Absolutely. I mean, unbeknownst to us, this sort of was a pilot for what we hope to be doing at the barge, or at least part of our initiatives there, which is really focused on that community. The barge will give us that facility. I mean, right now we've been in the sort of open air shelter of Wildwood Marina. This will allow us to potentially have indoor space, a wet lab, be able to host more groups and more summer camps throughout it.
No drinks for the kids, right?
No drinks for the kids.
The fee of I think it was $125. What length of camp does that support?
I believe that what you were looking at, that 125, was for those Rocky River camps.
Okay.
So those were 3 days, 6 hours a day camp.
Okay.
These camps are offered free of charge. We fundraise behind this in order to staff up and buy the supplies and equipment for it.
Maybe you're going to get to this later, but what is the cost of these almost 2,000 campers to the Metro Park? Forgetting about the gifting and all of that.
The cost of the traditional camps or of this camp right here?
Well, of all the camping.
Okay.
I'm just kind of curious.
I would need to do some work in terms of sort of parsing out all of our full-time salaries on that. I do know that in the summer, from a seasonal standpoint, we hire up probably something in the ballpark of about $100,000 per summer in seasonal staff, whose primary responsibility is the summer camp.
Yeah.
100 net.
Right. It's right around that.
So it's a very reasonable cost, really, mm-hmm. for what mm-hmm. we're getting at.
Right. I mean, again, it is supported by our operational cost of our full-time staff that are already on board.
Well, and the value you provide is huge.
Yeah.
It helped, Mary. The big additional cost would be your summer staff,
right,
and supplies. Otherwise, we already have staff,
right,
that are staffing these programs in Mary.
Exactly. So really, right. They're with us full time. So, right.
But the increase in the number of campers is really substantial last year to this year. And mm-hmm. I think if we could continue that progression, I think that would be terrific, particularly if it's 100% filled now, if we could jack it up a little bit.
We are always looking for ways to increase our numbers while maintaining our quality of camp. So we are already looking ahead to the summer of 2024 as well. It is, again, primarily for us making sure that we've got those qualified educators and figure out these creative solutions, which we've already got some of those in the mix for next year as well.
So now $10,000, let's just say hypothetically, how many campers would that provide?
In terms of the scholarships?
Yeah.
That $10,000 was the scholarships we offered this year that were for slightly under 100 campers.
Okay.
Right. Those were the scholarships. And so we scholarship those. In essence, we cover what we would have charged, or what we did charge the other participants for that. And that scholarship figures into that revenue number. Mm-hmm. We've had some challenges as we've sort of grown, primarily around how do we, again, increase our camps and diversify our audience, offering people these and families these opportunities. The scholarships, we're looking to grow the scholarship program. I think it's just this awareness that there is this funding available. We still, even with expansion of our camps almost 2.5-fold in the last 4 years, still are running a wait list of close to 1,000 potential campers who were on a wait list that we were unable to serve. So we're always trying to figure out ways we can expand that. And we recognize, too, transportation can be a barrier for many families. Again, through our Euclid Beach summer camp, we're really trying to address that. We're offering camps in our non-nature center location so that we're spread out further throughout the county, so that hopefully that transportation is not so much of a challenge. And then the thing that for us has been probably one of our bigger challenges is sort of the repercussions of COVID in the last 3.5 years, and kids, you know, doing remote learning and in front of schools. We have really noticed in the students that we see, not just in camps, but in our school programs, and certainly K-12 educators will tell you the same thing. There's really been a almost a loss of those social skills, of those learning, of that focus, of that attention. We are seeing kids emotionally and behaviorally a couple of years behind where they had been before that. So that's just something that we work through as our team. What that has meant for us a lot of times is pulling in potentially a third staff person to help us deal with maybe a particularly challenging or active student. But again, we feel like this is a very important way to sort of ameliorate and address those concerns and issues. And finally, looking ahead to summer 2024, as I mentioned, we are looking to promote the scholarship program and really even just the knowledge of the camps themselves to some new audiences. We're looking to streamline that scholarship process, and that's more of an internal process that we're doing, where we're really, for a lot of our camps, going to just be able to add those scholarships on as opposed to be able to hold those back. And then really thinking about how we are staffing, in particular having, again, potential extra staff around to help when there's a time where we may have a child that is special needs and needs that extra attention. So I wanted to thank you for letting me be here this morning. Thank you, obviously, for the support that you give to the Outdoor Experiences team. This is really important work to what we are and what we do as Cleveland Metro Parks, and we appreciate the ability to do that.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah, very valuable program.
I think we owe a debt of gratitude to the entire outdoor education teams, both here at the zoo and in the parks. Let's give them a round of applause. Next update is Baldwin Creek Removal Project. This is in Millstream Run. The board has approved the arrangement with the WRRSP. This is the nuts and bolts of the actual project.
Good morning, commissioners. So we will be bringing in front of you in several months a recommendation to hire a design builder for this project. So we wanted to give you a little background today as we prepare for the next steps. So we are in Millstream Run Reservation. In the city of Berea. This is the Baldwin property. So the property itself was acquired last year. It was acquired in partnership with the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. This property has seen chronic flooding just south of Coe Creek. It's 8.2 acres in totality, and within the property itself, Coe Creek itself does flow through the property, so giving us great opportunities for habitat restoration, like we said, dam removal, and floodplain reconnections. So the property itself, you can see, sits here in the process of working through the WRRSP program. They will fund certain improvements, and in exchange for that funding, the hatched area, you'll see, we will be restricting that area for those habitat restoration activities. We came up with a preliminary plan, don't expect you to read all the details here, of removing the dam, reconnecting the floodplain, reestablishing habitat, and demolishing the existing buildings on site. And we were then funded after we applied for the grant.
Go back to that one quick shot. Absolutely. One of the things, the questions you asked about the drones too, the invasive plants, they're using it for invasive plant control as well. The drones, they're actually applying products to them as well.
Phragmites galore.
Yeah, so we have the capability not only to apply products from drones to the invasive species, but also fly infrared cameras over different plant colonies to figure out if there are invasive species or what kind of plant mix we have. So we're using drones for a lot of
that. And so that box, that polygon, is basically the floodplain you're establishing that'll contain it, or does it go beyond that?
It's going to be that polygon is not specific to the floodplain. Our floodplain is going to more mimic the corridor of the creek itself, but the WRRSP process, and Kyle works hand in hand with them about what portion of the properties we restrict, just like we did at Acacia, just like at Bonnie Park. In exchange for the funding, they want to make sure that certain portions of the property are restricted in perpetuity from certain uses. So that is the portion of this property that'll be restricted.
So where was
conservation easement then?
Correct.
Yeah.
So the floodplain in that particular area would be sort of upper from the flow of the river, is that? But it's not the whole thing.
It is not the whole thing. Although that property does flood per se when we get a 10, 15, 25-year storm, we're really going to be concentrating the floodplain reconnection activities along this specific corridor.
And that's what you see. Even after removing the dam, you'll still have enough storage?
Correct. Actually, here's the dam here.
Yeah.
The dam is a very low head dam. So it really does not, it impairs water quality. We want to bring this stretch of the stream up into its warm water habitat designation. But actually, the dam does not hold back like Hinckley Dam during a rainstorm. All it really does is create a hydraulic jump. So we need to take that out to allow for better fist passages and then for sediment transport as
okay.
well.
Okay.
So it's really more of an impairment than it is a true impoundment on the creek itself. So working with the Water Resource Restoration Program, sponsor program, and again, that action item was before you this morning to work with the sponsor specifically, we're receiving a little over $700,000. That will help us remove this low head dam, restore about 510 feet of stream, reconnect the floodplain, stabilize the bank, and then separately, we're going to be demolishing some of the structures on site. There are multiple structures on site, multiple concrete pads. So this project will all be done at the same time so we can get some good economies of scale. So we're going through design builder selection yet in 2023. In 2024, we'll go through the design and permitting process with the Army Corps, OEPA, et cetera. We expect to start construction in 25 and be done by fall of 25. So that is it.
Nice.
Excellent. The next is Wendy Park, nature-based shoreline restoration. Sean.
Okay, thank you. And Jen is going to help as well with this one. So Wendy Park Nature-Based Shoreline Restoration, this is a project that we've been working on for some time. At Wendy Park, so we'll give you the location here in our lakefront reservation. Wendy Park itself is about 22 acres, you know, seeing about 350,000 visitors a year. We've gone through a lot of planning at Wendy Park. We've seen a lot of improvements at Wendy Park. But one area that we pay specific attention to is the shoreline by the volleyball courts. We're in an interesting setting here because we have erosion, but at the same time, we're situated behind the harbor wall. So that set of facts gives us some unique circumstances to work within. And we've been working with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, who gave us a grant to look at how we could potentially naturalize the shoreline without a traditional hardening of the shoreline. So basically a nature-based design that would combine natural materials and rock.
That pine tree is not part of the...
That pine tree is holding on for dear life, yes. But yeah, it could be part of a new design. So we're going through this process where they provided us the grant, and then we've worked with KS Associates, who has put together a design for us.
Okay, so because of the wave energy and that's causing the erosion and the lake levels, it really is a combination between a bit of hard engineering when we think about the use of rocks and stone, but then the nature-based solutions are really on along the shoreline. Variety of things, not just the native plantings, but there's also core logs, so that's coconut fiber logs that help to stabilize the bank while we're waiting for the plantings to grow and develop really robust root systems. And really this
is slowly decomposes the roots.
Correct. Yep. Yep. So that's the difference with bioengineering. We say it's its weakest point when it's installed and it's getting stronger over time. Whereas hard solutions like stone, their strongest point is the day that they're installed and they get weaker over time. So that's why we have the combination of the two to protect the initial installation, but this will just grow and strengthen the bank, really provide that resilience to the changing lake levels.
What's the transition period for the logs to decompose and the roots to?
Great question. So generally native plants take a couple of growing seasons to really begin to develop, because what we don't see is the roots are growing underground. Sure. And then we begin to see the above ground growth. So at least the first 2 years, and then we'll see it really take off after that.
Thanks.
We've been talking a lot about the use of drones today. So we have been able to utilize the drones to take aerial photography over time to watch the progression of the lakeshore here. But we also have a device that we can put onto one of our small watercraft, and it is sonar, so that we can then go out into the lake bed itself and determine what the bottom elevation of the lake bed is, and then we can use that during the process of design. So this is just a small example of what we've been able to do with our technology in-house. Wow. So where we are. We are in the process of receiving a grant award from NOAA to help partially fund the stabilization project. We expect by the end of the year to competitively bid the design that we have now worked through with ODNR. We hope to start construction in the spring. And part of this process is the Ohio Department of Natural Resources is partnering with us on a training. So they're going through a new nature-based design platform for engineers and hydrologists, and they would like to bring them to the site for both a classroom experience and then an on-site planting experience in May. So we're working through the logistics.
So this is kind of a prototype?
It is a prototype, and with the success we've had with NOAA grants, it's something that we want to continue to show that we're really progressive on. So the goal here is to partner and then have the trainings and be done by summer of 24.
Cool.
Sean, you have kind of an interesting wave climate there, because you have the opening to, which is a horrible wave climate with the Kaga River and coming out and the wind coming out of the north,
yes.
You know, creating a nasty situation. Why wouldn't the use of putting some groins in there help to stabilize some of the soil there?
It certainly could. The expense of groins and the impact aesthetically is one thing that we need to consider. There are very few areas on our lakefront where we have the ability to test these nature-based design solutions, because we are behind the harbor wall. And yes, when we do get the north or northeast wind, those waves just make their way right through the opening at the river channel. And we're designing for that worst case scenario. But we really want to take the advantage of the partnership and the funding here.
It's educational all the way around.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Would it be interesting to experiment with one that's maybe 10 feet long? I mean, it was something that is minimal. But I think you would find that you would trap sand behind it, I would think.
It's a really good suggestion. In fact, when we're working with Chaos on the final design, we can work with them potentially with some of the core logs that Jen was talking about to maybe position them to act as a small onshore groin, if you will. So, yeah, really right now, everything's a possibility. So really, we can absolutely consider it.
Is this experimental to the Metro Parks properties, or has this methodology been used in other places along the lakefront?
So ODNR has been going through a pilot program, and they have hired consultants for the past few years to test this out elsewhere. So the answer to your question is no, this isn't experimental just to Metro Parks properties. This work has been somewhat tested in the Sandusky Bay. So there hasn't been a lot of it, but ODNR is really pushing for these nature-based solutions rather than hardening the shoreline like we've done for 100 years. We're happy to kind of be at the forefront of that, but not the first. So we're looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's mostly new.
Mostly new. Yes.
Mostly. Good. That is the last info item. Again, I'd like to thank the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Foundation for their considerable donation to Cleveland Metro Parks in this amazing space. There is no old business. The date of the next regularly scheduled meeting is Thursday, November 16th, and there is an executive session.
Is there a motion to go into executive session to discuss the purchase and acquisition of real property?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Bruce Rinker.
Aye.
Yvette Itu.
Aye.
Dan Moore.
Aye.
We vote on nothing more. Thank you all. This is a great space. Very, very cool. We are back. No further business. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.